Hi, everybody. Welcome along to another episode of the Dispatches Podcast. My name is Brendan Malone. It is great to be back with you again. And today's topic of conversation, we have a new pope, but what is the significance of the new papal name that he has chosen for himself? Hi, my name is Brendan Malone, and you're listening to The Dispatches, the podcast that strives to cut through all the noise in order to challenge the popular narratives of the day with some good old-fashioned contrarian thinking. You might not always agree, but at least you'll be taking a deeper look at the world around you. A huge thank you to all of our patrons. It's thanks to you that this episode is made possible. If you want to support our work and hear more of it, then please go to patreon.com/leftfootmedia, become a $5 monthly patron, and you will get a daily episode of the Dispatches podcast. Also, you can go to our Substack page and you can become either a free or a paid monthly subscriber there as well. So we have a new pope, Habemus Papam, Pope Leo XIV. Before I go any further in today's episode, and I really, really mean this, please take everything that I say today for exactly what it is. My imperfect and flawed personal reflections. I do not possess any secret insider information. I am not bestowed with any divine insight and wisdom that makes my thoughts infallible or more meaningful than those of others. And as I say to every audience that I engage with, all glory goes to God for anything good that comes out of my mouth, all the rubbish that is my fault. And please God, may you forget it before you've even finished listening to this podcast. I should also say that this was not the plan that I had for today. As you can imagine, I had a completely different episode planned. I am now going to push that out by a week. And so today things have been completely upended by the announcement of a new pope. Now, before we talk about what I think could, and I say that with big, bold, capital letters and underlined multiple times, what could be the important significance of the new papal name, I just want to share a few other thoughts. First of all, and I think this is important to keep in mind, especially in the current age where everything is hyper-politicized, and also now we find ourselves with mainstream media and mass media communications and social media, etc., just constantly bombarded with everyone's thoughts and opinions on the world, popes are not politicians. And so one thing I would encourage all of us to do, and I include myself in this, is actually to ignore all of the media talking heads. Most of them are coming at this from the completely wrong-headed perspective. They are treating the Pope like he is nothing more than a religious politician, and so they are assessing him through that particular lens, and so they are just imposing upon him their own political takes on the world in general, or what they would like to see from the papacy, but it is just pure politics and not much else. And sadly, even some of the Catholic talking heads, one of the things that I've found already a bit sad to see today is that there's already been dissent and diatribe, certainly sort of like a down-in-the-mouth sort of pessimism from some people. And that's, I think that's really, really sad to see. People just already are like, oh no, this is going to be terrible. And I'm thinking to myself, what possible grounds could you have for saying that, number one? And number two, where is your Christian hope? That is not a great place to start from at all. I think it's important to recognize here that a pope, as I said, is not a politician. They are a spiritual father. And just like your natural father, you don't slander your father around town, and definitely you don't do that in public. And you also don't get to vote for your father. Like, imagine if you had a friend who just their entire life wandered around saying stuff about how they really wish their mother had chosen a different man to be your father. You would sort of think there's, at the very least, something just a little bit odd about that kind of approach, because it's not really that kind of a relationship. It's not like the boss at work or someone who's been chosen to be the coach of your favorite sports team or something like that. And so it is a relational thing, and it's important to recognize that. As I said, the political trap, the politicization is just already out there. It's everywhere. And it will do either one of two things if we're not careful. One, it will pull us into a very warped view of things that really isn't good. Secondly, if it doesn't do that, it might well lead us to tear our hair out in frustration and maybe even with a sense of despair. And it's never good to lose your peace in that way. The other thing I'd say is that I think the task ahead for Pope Leo XIV is really quite mammoth. I don't think this should come as a shock to any thinking person. We have an unresolved abuse crisis in the church, sadly still unresolved, and it has reached to the highest levels in the church in recent years, right up to the very top of the papacy, sadly. There's the China situation with the Communist Chinese Party and that very unhelpful deal that was done previously. There's the Vatican finances. They are a mess. There is the traditional mass situation. It's a serious open pastoral wound in the life of the church. We've got this de facto schism that is simmering away in Germany. The Germans. So there's some issues there. And it's sad to say it, but the church really is now more divided than what it was 13 years ago. A lot of formerly closed battlefields, or what I think most people thought were formerly closed, were sort of reignited and have been set alight again, and that's created all sorts of divisions and issues. And so it's a pretty challenging time for Pope Leo XIV to step into the shoes of Peter and do his best to, you know, to try and lead the church forward and be the chief shepherd. My hopes, just personally speaking, I would hope for a couple of things. I would really love a return to doctrinal clarity. And I think that is definitely a pressing issue. It's a very inescapable issue, but it is something that is urgently, I think, needed. The very fact that we have now like a cottage industry of what some are calling pope-splainers, people who exist and have built themselves an entire online presence of having to actually mediate and explain what the various statements of the previous pope actually meant and how they weren't really inconsistent with Orthodox Christian thought, etc. The mere fact that that is a thing and has actually become a very necessary thing in a lot of cases means that you do have a very serious issue there. You've either got a major communications problem and things are not being communicated as clearly and succinctly as they could be, or you have genuine theological issues with what actually was being taught. And so either way, it's not good. And I think a return to doctrinal clarity is absolutely essential because it is something the world is crying out for as well. And the church just can't be effective in her mission if there is uncertainty in an age of great uncertainty in the culture. I think it would be also great if we saw less media interviews, definitely less off-the-cuff media interviews, shall we say that. I think it would be really great if the papacy was really more about spiritual fatherhood and focusing on like the spiritual life and well-being of the church and some of those sort of fundamentals, those internals, which brings me to my third hope, which is a return to the fundamentals with an emphasis on the flock and on spiritual renewal. It just feels at times, whether that's been a hijacking or not, because often that can be the case, the secular powers that be and the mainstream media are more than willing to hijack the papacy for their own purposes if they can get away with it. But basically, it sort of feels like at times the focus has been far too external and not internal enough where it should be. So not navel-gazing and not sort of a holy huddle, but an actual care for the flock itself and a strengthening of the flock so that we can be effective in our evangelistic mission in the world. And also, I think at times it feels like there's been that hyper-politicisation has really come in and has hijacked things in places which haven't been good. And so it would be great to see more prayer and less politics. I think that would be good. And lastly, I think we really do need a pope who is very focused on intentional unity. I think that would be a really beautiful healing balm at this time, as I said, because of some of those wounds. So that's my personal thoughts and hopes for the papacy of Pope Leo XIV. So what about the significance of the name? Because I think this is kind of interesting, and this really is something that has struck me as being something that could well be of great note and great importance. And again, I will reiterate this very, very important point. Please do not attach any prophetic power or special significance to what I'm saying here. This is not some divine insight. I'm just a mad Irishman who is sharing his thoughts about the world. And these are things that have just really struck me as being significant since the announcement of Pope Leo XIV. Ultimately, I do not know why he has chosen this papal name, but I think the choice is definitely interesting, and there could be some deeper significance here that is absolutely worthy of consideration. We could well be in one of those profoundly important, well, we always are, I suppose, in a sense, in a profoundly important moment in the life of the church, but I think we could well be at one of those profoundly important junctures in the life of the Christian church. And the papal name that Pope Leo XIV has taken could well be a very important signifier to that fact. Like if a pope had come out onto Loggia and had announced that they were taking the name Pope Benedict XVII, it would have been very clear to me where they were heading and a lot of what their focus was going to be. But that obviously didn't happen. And also, if a pope had come out and had said, I'm going to be Pope Francis II, or Pope John Paul III, or Pope Paul VII, or Pope John the 24th, but none of those happened. Instead, we have a pope who came out and was announced as Pope Leo XIV. And to me, that was extremely fascinating. As I said, if the pope had come out and said, I am Pope Benedict XVII, straight away I would have gone, oh, that's very interesting. But next to that, the fact that he's come out and he has taken the name Pope Leo XIV, that to me is probably the second most interesting name that could have been taken by the new pope. Because as I said, I think it could signal something quite important is about to unfold in the life of the Christian church. And again, I say the word could in big, bold capitals that are absolutely underlined. This is me just wondering aloud as I contemplate this papal name. And what's interesting straight away about this is that he hasn't taken the name of one of the previous, very close previous papacies, certainly not the most immediate papacy. And in actual fact, he hasn't taken a name of one of the post-Vatican II popes. He's gone back to a pre-conciliar pope. And I do find that quite interesting. Not just that, but the name Pope Leo has been significant in the history of Christendom. Pope Leo I, for example, is a doctor of the church, and that is an honorific that very few people are bestowed with. He contributed majorly to the work of the Council of Chalcedon, which was a fundamentally important council in addressing heresies pertaining to Christology, the nature of Christ, specifically the heresies of Nestorianism and Monophysitism. And Nestorianism is the heresy that tried to assert that Jesus had two separate natures, one was human and the other was divine. Monophysitism is the heresy that tried to assert that Christ was only divine with no human nature, as opposed to the Christian teaching of there being a hypostatic union, as it is known in theology. Christ has two natures, one fully divine, the other fully human, and they are united in the one person of Jesus Christ. The other thing that's interesting about Pope Leo I is that he boldly rode out to meet Attila the Hun in the 400s when he was on the rampage and persuaded him to turn back from his planned armed invasion of Italy. That is no mean feat at all, and it is quite an act of courage that he displayed there. Another thing that was quite important about Pope Leo I was that he was also quite key in shaping the understanding about papal authority, and this is something that I think some further clarity is desperately needed around once again in the age that we find ourselves living in. Sadly, there has been a type of ultramontanism, a type of treating the Pope as if he was a divine and infallible emperor, as if he was a president and his word on every single issue was absolute. That is not and has never been the Catholic teaching. That is a false anti-Catholic caricature of what the papacy is. So if the Pope gets up and declares one day that he thinks that Weet-Bix is the best cereal, that does not mean that we are all bound to agree with him on that particular issue. And so I think there are some questions that have arisen, and a big part of that is the fact that we now live in the age of mass media communications as well, and that has an impact upon any leadership role. and how it is viewed in the world. And I think there are some questions now that absolutely need to be clarified, and the church does need to contemplate around the issue of the limits of papal authority and ensuring that we as Christians are catechized correctly to understand what the truth of these matters is, what the actual church teaches about the papacy and its authority and its limitations, etc. I think that's really, really important. And then there is the more recent Leo, and this one strikes me as possibly being a little bit more significant in all of this. That is Pope Leo XIII. He was Pope from 1878 to 1903. And at just over 25 years in length, his was the fourth longest serving papacy in the history of the Christian Church. And one thing to consider here is that the new Pope Leo, Pope Leo XIV, he could well be in office for a similar length of time. He is of such an age that he could be Pope for a while. Now, Pope Leo XIII, some interesting things to note about him. He was well regarded for his intellectual rigor, and he is known for his engagement with the secular culture of the day. His most famous, but I think also most criminally underrated of late encyclical, was Rerum Novarum on capital and labor. And I really think this is a very powerful encyclical. It is one of my personal favorite papal encyclicals, and I actually think it's even more prescient than ever before. In many ways, it was not just relevant for the times that he was living in, but it was also very prophetic, because some of these issues have only got worse, actually. And this encyclical was a very bold and clear refutation of both socialism and the excesses of capitalism and liberalism. He is really, as a result of this particular encyclical, largely considered to be the father of modern Christian social teaching or social doctrine. But what is vitally important to note here about all of this is that this is definitely not the modern politicized and very anemic version of Christian social teaching that we often encounter. Let me give you a quote from that encyclical to explain what I mean. Remember, this is an encyclical that is addressing economic and social issues, particularly of the working classes. Quote unquote, "If human society is to be healed, only a return to Christian life and institutions will heal it. In the case of decaying societies, it is most correctly prescribed that if they wish to be regenerated, they must be recalled to their origins." And that is just one small quote of a whole much bigger section where he really expounds on just how essential Christianity, Christ, and the Christian church is to healthy, flourishing societies and to social well-being in society. This is not an anemic version of Christian social teaching, which sadly at times we have been exposed to. He's not proposing an NGO-type Christianity or a humanist church. That's not the answer he's proposing. Christ must be first and foremost, and that is very clear in the life and the teachings of Pope Leo XIII. And also, this encyclical is very clear about the fact that this must be firmly grounded in the family and the rights of the family. It's a really, really beautiful encyclical. If you haven't read it, you should read it. And I'm actually planning a little bit of a remedy for those who might want to take a bit of a deeper dive into that particular encyclical, so keep an eye out for that. But basically, as I said, his social teaching, Pope Leo XIII, was profoundly rich, and it has a breadth and a depth that is sadly often missing from much of what people present today as Christian social teaching, which tends to perhaps focus solely on, for example, the environment or environmental questions. Not that they are not important, but we have reduced and stripped all of the great richness out of Christian social teaching, if that's all we think it is. Or maybe it's been hijacked at times by political ideologies or political policy settings, and that's really the extent of how we've seen or heard of it. When in actual fact, what's missing is that deep call to conversion and to Christian holiness, and how essential that is for structuring a healthy and flourishing society. This is not, as I said, politicized social teaching. It is the deep magic of Christ. Not that magic's the right word, is it? But you know what I mean. To borrow from C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles of Narnia, it is the deep magic of Christ and Christian self-giving love extrapolated into the realm of economics and political life. Now, subsequent popes have also written very beautifully on this, but I think it is quite significant in the papacy and in the life of Leo XIII. Pope Leo XIII was also a student of Thomas Aquinas, and he brought Thomas Aquinas back front and centre of Christian thought during his papacy. To this particular end, he actually sponsored a special edition of the works of Thomas Aquinas. He did this in 1879, and that particular edition of the works of Thomas Aquinas was overseen by a group of Dominican scholars. And again, in the current age we find ourselves living in, I can't understate how fundamentally important it would be to actually return to a bit more of a scholastic rigor. Now, you can't just stay in that place. You can't just have a dry, wooden sort of programmatic or rote-based approach to theology, but certainly that intellectual rigor and logical and, I think, rational component of doctrine and teaching is absolutely essential. You know, getting from A to B to C to D, there needs to be a certain logical clarity there. There needs to be there's a great wisdom in Thomas, is what I'm trying to say, in a very bad and deficient kind of way. Remember, I didn't plan this episode today. This was not what I was going to talk about at all. He also, Pope Leo XIII, asserted the Christian commitment to the belief that faith and science coexist together as partners. They are not enemies in conflict. And then to this particular end, he refounded the Vatican Observatory, which was obviously dedicated to the science of astronomy and is still going strong today. Pope Leo XIII is also credited with bringing back stability and normalcy to the life of the church after the very tumultuous and irregular papacy of his predecessor, Pope Pius IX, which was a very, very interesting time in the life of the church. And so, yeah, that could well be something that's quite relevant for the times that we find ourselves living in. Importantly, he was also, this is Pope Leo XIII, a man of great prayer. He was especially devoted to the spirituality of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and he was the one who introduced the promotion of monthly prayer intentions all the way back in 1890 that started, and he was the Pope that started it. And he established a papal institution which encourages Catholics specifically to prayer and action as being essential to the church's mission in the world. He also instituted a special prayer of Christian spiritual warfare against the devil, known as the St. Michael the Archangel prayer. We pray this prayer every single day in our household, and it goes like this: St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in this day of battle. Be our safeguard against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray, and do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, cast down into hell Satan and all the other wicked spirits who wander now throughout the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. Powerful prayer, a favourite in our family home. And one other thing about Pope Leo XIII, and by the way, this is just a very brief summary. There are multiple other things we could talk about, like the fact that he was quite an effective diplomat, generally in Europe, but he was quite an effective diplomat around the world on the global stage while he was a pope and restored a lot of order in that regard. So there's lots of things that we could actually talk about Pope Leo XIII. He's a very, very significant pope. But one other thing that I think is worthy of consideration is his emphasis on the profound importance, the fundamental importance of the scriptures in the Christian pursuit of theology and theological study. And at a pivotal and key moment in the history of the world where theology was sort of just being turned into a type of secular science, if you like, a religious science. And there was a real strong emphasis from his papacy on the scriptures being essential to this. And he instituted specific things to really strengthen this during his time as well as Pope. Which brings me to one other little interesting factor that happened to pique my interest. And that is the fact that Pope Leo XIV, our brand new Pope Leo, is also an Augustinian. And the reason that piqued my interest was Pope Benedict XVI was also considered to be very Augustinian in his approach. And that was one of the great strengths. And it's not just of his papacy, but in actual fact, it really is of his scholarly and theological writings. There was something very beautiful in that regard, but also as a big part of his papacy. He was very much in the mode of talking, and he talked quite regularly about this, about the fact that Christianity is not a commitment to a set of doctrines, it's not a philosophy, it's not an ideology, it is a relationship. And it is a relationship with the person of Jesus Christ. And it was a very, very beautiful thing. And it was very much one of the things I really loved about Benedict's papacy. But that was a hallmark of his life when you read his writings. And so it struck me as kind of interesting that here we have this Augustinian who has now been made our new pope. And Pope Benedict, who really was a great spiritual father to the church and also quite pivotal, the timing of his papacy and the place in history that we found ourselves in at that moment. And so I just wondered to myself, could there be something significant here? Again, as I said, please take this for what it is. It is me expressing to you the things that really struck me as significant. But I am not some divine oracle, so please don't treat me that way. I don't have any prophetic or divine superpowers that enable me to bestow upon my opinions, my mere opinions, the power of infallible and divine proclamations. That's not what they are. These are just my musings on this particular issue. And of course, like any papacy, if the Pope, we don't pray for him, we don't support him in that way in his ministry, his unique and special calling to strengthen the brethren and really be that sign of unity and the chief shepherd of the Christian church, then obviously it's going to be a lot harder for him to do his job. So the future is in the hands of God, but those are my initial thoughts and the things that really struck me as being significant. Thanks again for tuning in. Don't forget, live by goodness, truth, and beauty, not by lies. And I'll see you next time on The Dispatches. The Dispatches podcast is a production of Left Foot Media. If you enjoyed this show, then please help us to ensure that more of this great content keeps getting made by becoming a patron of our work at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. Link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time on The Dispatches.